Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. If you haven't been down to the Brady District to see Philbrook Downtown, you've missed an entirely different Philbrook experience. Philbrook Downtown opened a couple of months ago and features modern and contemporary work, highlights from the Eugene B. Atkins Collection of Southwestern and Western Art, and Philbrook's extensive Native American collections. Opening the facility are two temporary exhibits, one devoted to the sculpture of abstract expressionist artist Adolph Gottlieb, and the other focuses on female artists from the early 20th century New Mexico art circles. Sirens of the Southwest, on display through November 10th, features the works of George O'Keefe, Dorothy Brett, Laura Gilpin, Rebecca Salisbury James, and many more. My guest today is the Chief Curator and Curator of American Art at the Philbrook, Catherine Whitney, to talk about the show which she curated. Catherine Whitney, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich. I'm glad to be here, as always.
And for those who have not been downtown to see the new Philbrook facility, it is a really nice facility, and you begin to see old favorites that you haven't seen in a while in a new setting, in what I would suspect a New York gallery setting, because it's just, you know, it's got the white walls, it's the old brick building, and so it's a great setting to see art in. And this gives you several new places to exhibit art. So what's your overall philosophy for displaying art in Philbrook?
Well, I think Philbrook Downtown is a wonderful opportunity for us. I think it's a perfect complement to the villa, you know, the kind of old mansion that is Philbrook that's wonderful, but sometimes has architectural and physical limitations, especially when showing contemporary and modern art. So our new space allows us these huge open spaces, as you said, very clean surfaces, high ceilings. We're not limited in size, and so much of contemporary art is large and scale is an issue. And so it really allows these beautiful, almost quiet spaces and strong spaces for us to work with. And then upstairs, we have Native American art on view, and it's really a nice way to show contemporary art. At the villa, we have it on the lower level, and this is actually on the second floor downtown, and it has beautiful natural light and white walls, and it's just a really, I think, very fresh, wonderful way to sort of redisplay our outstanding collections.
You know, it doesn't matter how well you artificially light the basement, it's still a basement. It sort of has that feel to it, and I think when you're up on that second floor, I found myself looking more intently at some of the Native American collections than I had before. And of course, there's some exquisite artisanship in some of the early objects. And of course, the artwork is incredible, too.
Right. And it's a really nice, nuanced exhibition, I think, that kind of allows Christina, our curator of Native American art, she put together works from different time periods that maybe shared similar themes throughout the 20th century. So it's really a very rich, beautiful, and kind of nuanced display, I think.
Well, let's talk about the first temporary exhibition.
Yes.
There are two, actually. Let's talk about the one that probably you had the biggest hand in, which is Sirens of the Southwest, which is drawing on the Atkins collection.
Correct.
And this is female painters from the American Southwest. Now, we know George O'Keefe, but there were a whole other group of painters, some contemporary, some later, some a little earlier, that all were attracted to that New Mexico light that we hear about in the art world.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about Sirens of the Southwest.
Well, Sirens is, as you just said, exactly playing on the fact that George O'Keefe, while being the best known and most famous woman artist and modernist to go to the Southwest, she was by no means the only modernist and certainly not the only woman to explore the Southwest. And this is in the early decades of the 20th century up to about mid-century, so about, you know, post-World War I, sort of interwar period, up to mid-century, as I said. But O'Keefe, while the best known, was really surrounded by a whole community of artists. She, you know, has this reputation as being sort of the solitary priestess of the desert who ran away from the East, ran away from her husband, ran away from sort of Freudian interpretations and isolated herself and identified herself with the landscape of the Southwest. But the Southwest, Taos, Santa Fe really offered a lot of artists that same escape, if you will, sort of a spiritual rejuvenation and a really kind of different difficult time in American history when, you know, post-World War I, when everybody was a little shook up and the dust was settling and everybody was sort of looking inside, and whereas a lot of modernism prior to the war had looked to Europe, people were starting to say, you know, let's look within ourselves and let's look for another source of inspiration that's about our own identity, but that gets back to these sort of pre-industrialized times when life was simpler and more tied to the land and more, quote, authentic.
Right. You have to think of what's happening in Europe in 1920. It's constructivism. It's neoclassicism.
Right.
It's people like Leger doing, you know, these mechanicalistic sort of things. And Americans were taking a very different tact, and certainly more figurative than Europeans.
Yeah, there was sort of this classicizing tendency and a kind of realist tendency. You see that in O'Keeffe, that kind of precision in her painting. She's described as a modernist, but her works are very kind of precise and crisp. A lot of people attribute that to the clean air and bright light of New Mexico. But there was definitely, as I said, this kind of reaching for another source of inspiration.
Was it really just the light of New Mexico that attracted most of these artists, or the fact that you had this huge native population? And so it was a combination of that?
There was a lot of factors that went into it. Of course, the big skies, the open expanses, the very carved landscape formations and mesas were very attractive to a lot of modernists. It's almost kind of sense of foreshortening of space, too, that a lot of modernists like to portray in their works. So there was that.
You had desert and mountains.
Desert,
you know,
mountains,
very close
big
together.
Skies, intense colors. But then you also had a lot of cultural things going on, like the Museum of New Mexico opened in 1917. And they were quite smart in that they really tried to lure artists to the area by offering them free alcove space and unjuried exhibition spaces so they could kind of experiment, be artists, and show their work. And they understood that if the artists came, then the collectors and the tourists would probably follow, as they did. There was also this sense of kind of bohemian experimentation, particularly in Santa Fe. And a lot of the artists in this show, like Dorothy Brett, people like that, they went to Taos to sort of get away from the rat race, essentially, you know, to get back to this very nature-based, what they saw as a spiritual existence. I think they sort of equated Native American culture and life and ritual with something that was more spiritually rich than what they saw going on in American society with industrialization.
It was kind of like an early 20th century version of going to Provence.
Exactly. Or yes, like the Southwest became the new Paris, essentially. Yep. And whereas the Europeans had looked to Africa, a lot of the Americans sort of looked to the Southwest.
Well, tell us about some of the sirens to the Southwest. When you first walk in the exhibit, you see a very close friend of George O'Keeffe. I guess they went to New Mexico together, and that's Rebecca Salisbury James.
Yeah.
And she's doing a very interesting, I'd never heard of this technique of, it's called reverse oil paintings on glass. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, Becky James was a really interesting character who was sort of a social member of Alfred Stieglitz and O'Keeffe's circle back in New York around the 1920s. She was probably best known as her from her associations. She was the daughter of Nate Salisbury, who was the originator of Buffalo Bill's Wild West show. Then she married a protege of Stieglitz, who was Paul Strand, a modernist photographer. Mm-hmm. So she was married to him from 22 to 32. And then she was also the travel companion and friend of George O'Keeffe, and went out to New Mexico with O'Keeffe first in 1929. Actually, Becky James had been there first, but it was O'Keeffe's first extended time. So she was really a social member of the Stieglitz and O'Keeffe circle, and struggled, I think, to find her own voice as an artist. And one time when she was painting on a glass palette, she turned it over and saw how beautiful the colors were through the back, and I think was also searching for a unique voice and medium, because if you're friends with O'Keeffe, how do you assert yourself, right? So she was inspired by O'Keeffe, and her imagery is very O'Keeffe-esque, even a little bit more naive, perhaps, but she does flowers, crosses, you know, rural subject matter of New Mexico, like O'Keeffe did, but this very kind of luminous quality that you get from reverse oil painting on glass, which is sort of a folk art medium that she revived.
Mm. And there's about two or three works in the show. Mm-hmm. One, Peaches and Banana, which is a still life, which is a very nice, I'd call it early mid-century still life, has modernist tendencies, but it's just a very plain view of a still life. And then one that looks like it's right out of O'Keefe's playbook. It's a Jimson weed or something like that, a morning glory of some sort called With a Blessing. Maybe a moonflower. Maybe that might be what it is. But it's just the singular flower on a vine.
Kind of isolated with a solid background and very luminous. And, as I said, her imagery borrowed quite a bit from O'Keeffe's, but she distinguished herself with this very unique medium that had been traditionally a barbarian folk art medium that a lot of the German expressionists were starting to look at again. And then was picked up again in American culture, the colonial era, and then the 19th century as more kind of a decorative medium around mirrors. And you'd see sort of trains and transportation themes illustrating clocks and mirrors and things. Mm-hmm. And so James was very interested in this folk impulse in modern art. So a lot of modernists, ironically, at this time, again, probably to get back to these more authentic American roots, were kind of backward glancing, but using very modern advanced methods. So it was kind of this neat dichotomy.
You know, you think of the arts and crafts movement.
Right.
Same sort of situation.
Exactly.
You know, we've made furniture more and more ornate. Let's go back to the simplicity of
Because I think they felt like with modernity came this dehumanization, and they really wanted to get back to sort of the spirit and soul of what it meant to be an individual artist and an American. And so they looked to these traditional.
Yeah.
Inspirations.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are a number of, speaking of George O'Keeffe, there are a couple of pieces by George O'Keeffe in the show as well. Mm-hmm. Some very interesting drawings.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really early piece from 1916.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the clouds, I actually was on my notes. I said they look like Marsden Hartley's clouds.
Right.
It has those very stylized white puffy clouds.
Right.
A ram's horn, which we come to associate with a lot of her work in the mid-40s. And
bones, right.
Yeah, exactly. And then a very interesting oil painting. It's called Kachina.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the background, it looks absolutely O'Keeffe, but the actual Kachina figure kind of looks... It looks odd. It's a little different.
Right. They're a little quirky. She did a series of Kachina or Katsina dolls. They were a lot of Pueblo cultures use Katsinas, and especially this was a Hopi doll in particular. And they were thought to embody spiritual and natural forces. And I think O'Keeffe was very inspired by a lot of she was very focused on, as you mentioned, still life with Rebecca James. So she looked at ordinary objects and how they were beautiful or empowered. And obviously this was an object that had sort of these subtle symbolic potentials and spiritual qualities in it. So I think she was kind of fascinated with that. She went to a lot of Native American dances, obviously knew the landscape very well. And that particular Kachina doll was given to her by Paul Strand, ironically, who is a friend of hers and Rebecca James's husband. So there's these strange networks and weavings that happen within the show. You know, the people kind of all knew each other, and even like Rebecca Salisbury James, whose father ran the Buffalo Bill Wild West show. Dorothy Brett, who's another artist, had seen that every year when it came through London, and that inspired her to go to the Southwest. So there are all these strange, wonderful interweavings with all these artists.
My guest today is Catherine Whitney, the chief curator and curator of American art for Philbrook Museum of Art, and we're talking about the new Philbrook downtown facility and some of the first shows there. Sirens of the Southwest is what we're talking about right now. It's on display through November 10th. There's also a display of the work of Adolf Gottlieb as well, which will be closing very soon.
The 24th.
And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, you talked about Dorothy Brett, mm-hmm. and there's another common theme too, which is D.H. Lawrence was there. And D.H. Lawrence was, you know, the social circles spread, and I think the Lawrence family was also instrumental in Brett coming to the Southwest.
Right. There's a photograph in the show of Mabel Dodge Lujan, and she's sort of the glue. She was sort of the impetus to get a lot of modern thinkers, writers, artists out to the Southwest. She grew up in Buffalo and became sort of this cultural matron who had this salon for artists, both in Florence and in Greenwich Village. She moved out to Santa Fe in 1916 with her third husband, abandoned him, moved to Taos, fell in love with a Taos Indian, Tony Lujan, and basically built this mecca in the high desert and invited all her East Coast friends to come cook for her and sort of entertain her and stimulate her. And so you have people like D.H. Lawrence and his wife Frida, who came on her invitation in 1924. And with them, Dorothy Brett came because she was sort of a big admirer of D.H. Lawrence, almost to the point of worship. And D.H. Lawrence wanted to essentially start a new sort of utopian environment in Taos. And Brett was this very eccentric character who had hearing problems and carried around an ear horn that she named Toby. And, you know, she didn't try to paint what she saw. And she often said, I don't care about technique. It's what you know, what's presented that's important.
And in the show, there's three fairly late Bretts, too. They're all from about the mid-60s. And really, they're very interesting pieces. Blessing of the Mares, it almost looks like Native American art in many senses.
Right.
And then you have a Jimenez corn dance and then a landscape. And it gives us a sense of her painting. And you're right. It's painterly in its own way, but it's kind of got a folk quality to it.
Yeah, it definitely does. She, I think she was more interested in capturing the energy and the rhythm of the rituals and the races and the dances that she saw. Of course, you know, they were not allowed to take photographs, to paint on site, to take notes. So again, you know, she'd experience these races and rituals and then go home and do it from memory. So there might have been a little bit of that, but she has these very kind of typical intense, bright primary colors, this view from above, and these very circular formats that are pretty traditional for her, but very intense. And some of the later pieces, as you mentioned, you know, Eugene B. Atkins, where most of this collection was pulled from. Eugene Atkins adored Dorothy Brett and collected a lot of her pieces, some of her best ones. And, you know, he started collecting in the early 60s. So that's probably explaining some of the dates on there. So.
Yeah. Now, one of the best pieces in the show is a fairly nicely finished. I would say it has to be probably 30s, early 40s. I don't think there's a date on it. A piece by Barbara Latham.
Right.
It's The Blizzard, which is really nice because you have this flowering plant inside the house, and then outside you can just see this whiteness of the blizzard.
Right.
And it's a wonderfully finished piece, and I really like it a lot.
Right. It's a very pensive, kind of powerful piece. Barbara Latham was an illustrator and painter in the area who was married to Howard Cook, who was also a well-known artist of the area. And he had gone on a Guggenheim Fellowship in Mexico, and she came along with him. So I think she really absorbed a lot of the Mexican mural influence from his time in Mexico. And you can see that in her work. She does these very lively, kind of playful and sometimes illustrative depictions of feast days and fiestas and things like that. This is the other side of her work. As her work got progressed into her mature style, it became a little bit more, expressive, but with the very Mexican mural type effect.
It does have that Diego Rivera and also
powerful.
Sort of a Thomas Hart Benton look, because I think that it might have been a tempura.
Right.
So it had that, you know, that just that vivid color.
Right.
And it's a gorgeous piece. And then we get to see a different side of her in some of the more sketchy pieces. There's a Gathering Aspens for St. Geronimo Day.
Right, exactly.
And so it's really interesting. I never heard of this artist before. But
well, we're going to do an exhibition later at the Philbrook main campus. I guess it's next summer, that will be a print show of Barbara Latham and her husband, Howard Cook. So that'll be a nice way to kind of see their creative union and their inspiration upon each other. But she was a very, very good printmaker as well. And so that painting, The Blizzard, that you talk about, it almost has a very kind of dry, etched-like quality to the paint, which was, I think, quite inspired by her printmaking.
Now, there's also photographers in the show. You mentioned the portrait of Mabel Dodge Lujan. That was by Laura Gilpin.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, right above that is it's an iconic image, because you have everybody from Ansel Adams to Emil Bistrom to, you know, everybody in the Southwest would go paint or photograph or sketch the Rancho de Taos church.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, I guess, from 1950, and it's a gorgeous image of the little Catholic church there in the little square in Rancho de Taos.
Right, and it's a very, still today, a very sought-after destination, but it's this very Spanish, organic monolith sort of in the high desert, if you will. And it's very powerful. And as you said, many modernists from O'Keeffe to John Marin to Bistrom. And O'Keeffe has some, I'm paraphrasing here, but she has some quote that she says, any modernist who goes to Taos has to paint it. So and Gilpin definitely tackled it in her photography too. But it's just looming in a very kind of earthy, organic
way.
Well,
I think it would appeal to any modernist because it's adobe walls. So you got the color that reflects the sun and yet there's no adornment on most of it. So right. It's basically you have these great geometric lines.
Absolutely.
Which and with shadows.
Right.
Because of the cross-like shape of the church.
Right. And like a lot of modernists in the Southwest, there's also this kind of almost spooky element of history in it as well, you know, that it comes from the earth, it's organic, but it's also there's a lot of history and culture behind it as well as being this very sleek modern form.
Yeah. Now, a couple other names I think it's Isla. Is it Isla or Ila? Ila McAfee.
Ila McAfee.
Ila McAfee. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'd never seen her work, but this was it's a gorgeous little painting of the Rio Chama up in northwest New Mexico.
Right. This is a wonderful piece that we actually borrowed from a private collector in Texas. Most of the collection comes from the Eugene B. Atkins collection, but there are about three kind of strategic loans from New York, Phoenix, and from this Texas collector. And she's somebody that I wanted to include that, again, is a little bit more overlooked. Her work's a little more inconsistent, and I remember this piece as being a really spectacular little landscape study of bright color. She's very well known also as an illustrator and did a lot of antelope and horse paintings. And because she illustrated, some of them are a little bit more sentimental. But then her best work is pretty glowing and did these wonderful little Native American portraits as well. But she's kind of off the charts a little bit in terms of being recognized. So that's what this show does. It's, you know, not that they were any less talented. It's just that for some reason they're not as recognized.
And then another one was Margaret LaFranc, and it's Winter in Nambe. I guess she settled just outside of Santa Fe.
Right.
And it's just a nice little landscape, winter landscape.
Right. Yeah, it's a very beautiful, minimal piece. And actually, that piece was recently donated from a foundation in Santa Fe, which was nice to add to the collection. And Margaret LaFranc was somebody that spent her kind of formative years in Berlin and Paris. And then, like many of these women, sort of retreated to the Southwest after divorce. Some of the women came for health reasons. Some came with their husbands. Some came to escape their husbands. And she came out to visit Frieda Lawrence in Taos and ended up staying in Nambe and also did a lot of illustrating and painting as well.
The name of the exhibit is Sirens of the Southwest. It'll be on display at Philbrook downtown through November 10th. My guest is Catherine Whitney, the chief curator and curator of American art. That's not the only temporary exhibit at Philbrook downtown. There's also a small showing of Adolf Gottlieb sculptures, but also canvases as well. Now, tell us a little about this show.
So Gottlieb, this work, this show is from the foundation, the Gottlieb mm-hmm. Foundation. And you may know Gottlieb as an abstract expressionist painter.
Yes.
He did actually experiment only very briefly in his career for a period of about a year and a half with sculpture. And they're, I think, exclusively in the foundation, is my understanding, and they're all on view here. And it's sort of a glimpse into a very well-known artist in American art, but a lesser-known aspect of his work.
And you see examples on the walls of his paintings, mm-hmm. which, I mean, he's reflecting the same themes in his sculpture.
Right.
He's famous for these, you know, color field paintings, which will have a couple of dots or
right.
a couple of, you know, this, it's not an asterisk, but it looks like a somewhat like a stylized asterisk.
Right.
And, of course that shows up in the sculpture
right.
over and over again. He was really drawn by this sort of color field and then just these little shapes.
Very limited color.
Yeah.
And the show is also wonderful in that it has his maquettes. And so you can sort of see his thought process with these different materials that he's working with and how he executed them later in his full-fledged sculpture. But you're right. There's a nice dialogue between the actual paintings and the sculptures. And you can see these very minimal forms that he used. That he was trying to reduce it down to sort of the bare elements of painting and use them as a very, very powerful means as just elemental forms themselves.
And this show closed actually just in a couple of weeks.
Yes,
yeah, so,
2 weeks. So,
yeah.
So come over and see it quickly.
And, of course, on the main floor, you also have your modern and contemporary art. We see there's been a number of new acquisitions. Right. So I think it's just because of the space limitations at the villa that we haven't seen some of these. We're talking about George O'Keefe. There, it looks like there's a very nice loan painting.
Right.
Looks like 1950s. Mm-hmm. It's when she's doing architectural elements.
Right.
And, just very strong geometry. Mm-hmm. And just a close element of a New Mexico adobe house,
right,
of some sort.
Against the sky. That was a patio door series that she did. And this almost looks like an eagle in flight abstraction with a kind of checkmarker wedge. And it's just blue, white, and black and very beautiful and stark. But she got she did this series in the 40s based on one of her houses in Abiquiu, New Mexico, and she said she bought it from the Catholic Church specifically for this door that fascinated her, and she did it and redid it.
And she did it and did it a hundred times.
And so
right.
This is, kind of moving on the end of that series, but, she would later do cloud abstractions. So so it's a really powerful piece, and this is on loan from a foundation in New York that we're very lucky to have, that O'Keefe as well as the Kachina that's in my show. And then you had mentioned the O'Keefe drawings. They're actually the lithographs of drawings that she did.
Oh.
So it's a portfolio Philbrook purchased that's a graphic survey of her career that she picked out 10 of what she felt were kind of representative pieces from her graphic career from about 1915 to 1945.
Well, that would make sense because it does look like it's different periods and the dates are from I think 50s or 60s, something like
right,
that.
Right. Yeah. Most of them are early, but as you said, the Ram's Horn is I think 45 or 49. So.
And as you go through the collection on the main floor, I mean, one of the things you see is these pieces we've never seen at Philbrook before. One is a big, huge 1980s de Kooning, which is it's just an exquisite example of that era of his work, and a Clifford Still.
Right.
A very nice Clifford Still.
So these are loans, but we're thrilled to have them included. And some of the new acquisitions, I think most of the labels are marked with new acquisition. And you're right, there are it's pretty significant if you go in. But we've been stashing a lot of these goodies so that we had sort of the big reveal when we opened, and we're really kind of focused on either gifts or very strategic acquisitions for downtown and to augment that part of our collection, which is a priority for us now.
Now, with the exhibition space, you have these two sort of side exhibition spaces for, I guess, temporary exhibitions. What's the philosophy for doing that? Will it be like this show, The Sirens of the Southwest, where it's kind of like you're sort of educating as well as showing work, giving us a sense of a particular school or something like that. What's the philosophy going to be?
Well, it's a little bit more, I would describe it as dynamic and experimental. So we have these two spaces that will be changing. They will be a reason to keep coming in, every couple weeks or so to see what's new, whereas the larger spaces will be a little bit more semi-permanent. These two dynamic spaces will switch, and they will range in shows from projects that sort of delve into strengths within the Atkins collection and women artists of the Southwest, and modernist was a strength that we wanted to announce and play with. We also have upcoming some exhibitions that might focus on one particular artist within the collection or contemporary artists we want to work with, or another alternative media, like we're going to be doing a photography show as well as a jewelry show. We're going to be having an Allen Hauser centennial celebration next summer. So it's really kind of mixed. As soon as Gottlieb comes down, we'll be showing a Masters of the Tao Society of Artists show, which is a little bit more traditional, but it does, again, delve into the strengths of the Atkins collection, and the building was meant to house the Atkins collection. So we'll be supplementing the Atkins Taos works with some works from the main building because Waite Phillips himself was a Taos collector. So,
all right. Well, we look forward to those exhibitions. Sirens of the Southwest on display through November 10th. Adolf Gottlieb, just a couple weeks left. August 24th is the last day for that at Philbrook downtown. Catherine, thanks very much for joining
us. Thank you, Rich. It was fun.
Catherine Whitney is the Chief Curator and Curator of American Art at the Philbrook Museum of Art. Philbrook downtown in the Brady District continues to feature Sirens of the Southwest on display through November 10th. The Adolf Gottlieb Sculpture Exhibit closes August 24th. Information at philbrook.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.